Good afternoon, friends and Federalists. My name is Elliot Peace. I'm the president of the Tampa Bay Lawyers Chapter of the Federalist Society. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce our keynote speaker, Vice President Mike Pence, this afternoon. But before I do so, I want to say a few words about him. Michael R. Pence, the grandson of an immigrant, was born in Columbus, Indiana, to Edward and Nancy Pence. As a young boy, he had a front row seat to the American dream. The future vice president watched his mom and dad build everything that matters, a family, a business, a good name. Sitting at the feet of his mother and his father, who started a successful convenience store business in their small Indiana town, he was raised to believe in the importance of hard work, faith, and family. Vice President Pence set off for college and law school, where he renewed his Christian faith and met the love of his life, Second Lady Karen Pence. After graduating, he practiced law, led the Indiana Policy Institute, and began hosting the Mike Pence Show, a talk show, talk radio show, and a television show. Along the way, he became the proud father to three children, Michael, Charlotte, and Audrey. In 2000, he won a race for a seat in the United States House of Representatives, the first of six terms. On Capitol Hill, he established himself as a champion of limited government, fiscal responsibility, economic development, educational opportunity, and the U.S. Constitution. His colleagues elected him to serve as chairman of the House Republican Study Committee and House Republican Conference Chairman. In 2013, Vice President Pence left the nation's capital when Hoosiers elected him the 50th governor of Indiana. He brought the same limited government and low tax philosophy to the Indiana State House. As governor, he enacted a series of tax cuts and focused on strengthening Indiana's competitive edge and attracting new investment and good-paying jobs. Due to his relentless focus on jobs, the state's unemployment rate fell by half during his 4 years in office. And at the end of his term, more Hoosiers were working than at any point in its 200-year history. Then Governor Pence also increased school funding, expanded school choice, and created the first state-funded pre-K program in Indiana history. It was Indiana's success story, and Vice President Pence's record of legislative and executive experience and his strong family values that prompted President Donald Trump to select him as his running mate in 2016. The American people elected him as vice president November 8, 2016, where he served 4 years in office. In February 2021, upon leaving office, he joined the Heritage Foundation as a distinguished teaching fellow. The Heritage Foundation helped shape his conservative philosophy for decades, and coincidentally, in 2005, he first met yours truly, a fresh college graduate interning at the Heritage Foundation. Vice President Pence also joined Young America's Foundation as a Ronald Reagan Presidential Scholar, whose vision and leadership inspired his youth. Vice President Pence remains grateful for the grace of God, the love and support of his family, and the blessings of liberty that are every American's birthright. Mr. Vice President, my two oldest boys and I were just in Indianapolis last month for the college football national championship game. While the 15-degree weather was not ideal, we received a warm Hoosier welcome. It is our pleasure to return the favor and welcome you to warm, sunny, and the free state of Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, the 48th Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence.
Well, thank you all, and hello, Federalist Society. Sounds like you got just an incredible conference, and it's our great honor to be able to join you today. I also want to thank Elliot Peace for that overly generous introduction. You read it just the way I wrote it. But all kidding aside, I was very humbled by it. But Elliot, the next time you introduce me, it can be a little bit shorter. I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican in that order, and it's my great honor to join you for the 8th Annual Florida Chapter's Federalist Society Conference. So thank you for the warm welcome. Great to visit with all of you. I also want to thank a leader who's truly devoted his life to the cause of limited government in our Constitution. I know he couldn't be with us today. We got a little bit of snow up in the northern half of the states. But join me in thanking Leonard Leo, my great friend and a great friend of freedom. I also want to thank another man. The last 30 years, Gene Meyer has transformed this organization from a small group of law students to one of the most respected and powerful legal organizations in America with 70,000 members. Gene, thank you for your principled and visionary leadership. And I always wait to introduce the highest ranking official in the room last. I had the privilege today to travel with my favorite person in the world and the best second lady the United States of America has ever had. Would you join me in welcoming my wife, Karen Pence, to the great state of Florida? You know, the Federalist Society has come a long way from its humble beginnings 40 years ago, when a handful of dissidents on a few law school campuses scattered around the country came together and made a stand for the Constitution of the United States. They came of age in a world when the law was too often defined by activist judges advancing radical political goals and sacrificing the constitutional principles upon which this nation was founded. They said that the government exists to preserve freedom and not micromanage the lives of free men and women. They said the job of the courts was to say what the law is, not what they want it to be. And 40 years ago, the Federalist Society was born on a foundation of freedom. They took stands that were not popular at the time, and in many quarters are still not popular, but they were firmly rooted in the ideals of the American founding. So thank you all. Thank you for your kindness to us over the years, and thank you for your friendship today. It really is good to be among friends. I know we're gathering at a challenging time in the life of our nation, but I got to tell you, I never felt better in my life. Kind of reminds me of a story our 40th president used to like to tell about a farmer who came time to take his cow to market. So he loaded his cow in the back of the pickup truck, the dog jumped in the cab, and as the story goes, they drove into town. But on the way there, there was an accident in an intersection. And the truck and the farmer went in one ditch, and the cow and the dog went in the other. This thing ends up in court after everybody recovered, and there was a moment where the attorney for the other driver had the farmer in the dock. And he said to him, sir, would you care to tell me what happened? He said, yes, sir. He said, I was driving down, went through the intersection, and your client, he just drove right into me, and me and the dog and the cow and the truck just went everywhere. And he said, sir, isn't it true that there was a sheriff on the scene who asked you how you felt, and you said, I never felt better in my life? And the farmer said, well, I reckon I did. And he said, no further questions. At that point, his own lawyer got up to do what's called redirect, Gene. And he said, would you care to explain the circumstances in which that happened? He said, well, I reckon I would. He said, see, I woke up after the accident, and I was laying there in a ditch, and I seen the sheriff. He was across the street, and he locked down and looked at my dog, and you weren't going to get that animal back. He was all busted up, and he pulled his revolver out, and he put it next to the dog's head, and he put him out of his misery. Then he walked over to my cow, and he said, I figure his back was broke because that animal wasn't going to recover. And so, again, he pulled his gun out, and he laid it by the cow's head and put him down. Then he walked across the street and looked at me and said, and how are you feeling? And I said, I never felt better in my life. And I got to tell you, I do, folks. I mean, because of each and every one of you, because of the progress that we have made in this country over the last four decades, conservative Federalist Society lawyers have changed the consensus, changed the courts, and changed America for the better. True. I mean, I don't have to tell you, because several of the judges are with us today. Members of the Federalist Society have served in positions in our courts, in the federal government, in the Congress, all across the nation. And for 4 years, you had some of your strongest and proudest supporters serving in the executive branch, I'm here to tell you, including in the office of the vice president. And with your support, the support of conservatives around America in 4 short years, we made America great again. Think about it. We rebuilt our military, we revived our economy, we rolled back regulations, unleashed American energy, and confirmed more than 300 conservative judges to our federal courts at every level. We changed America for the better. In fact, during the Trump-Pence administration, I'm proud to say that over 80% of our appellate court nominees were current and former members of the Federalist Society. And I know you noticed, we confirmed three outstanding Federalist Society members to the nation's highest court, Justice Neil Gorsuch, Justice Brett Kavanaugh, and Indiana's own Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Amazing. I mean, today, current and former members of the Federalist Society comprise a majority on the United States Supreme Court. Think about that, just four decades on. It's been an incredible journey, and it's only just begun. But for all the progress we've made, I don't have to tell the conservatives in this room. Since January 2021, our movement to restore the constitutional principles to our government is facing headwinds like never before. In less than a year, the Biden-Harris administration has unleashed a tidal wave of left-wing policies that threaten to wipe out the progress that we made. Frankly, the Democrats have moved so fast, sometimes I feel like the left hand doesn't know what the far left hand is doing. Think about it. We have the worst border crisis in the history of our country. Future generations are being saddled with trillions of dollars in debt. More on the way. And Biden's left-wing policies have sent inflation skyrocketing to the highest rate in four decades. They shut down American energy production, raising gasoline prices by 40% in just 1 year. We have a nationwide supply chain crisis that calls to mind the empty shelves that characterize the waning days of failing socialist countries. And the American people have seen their freedoms erode during the pandemic. And progressives continue to move the goalpost anytime someone dares to ask when we can have our liberty back. At the same time, violent criminals have virtually been given free rein in some of our largest cities. After the radical left's war on police caused a 30% spike in homicides in 2020, murders increased even higher during the first year of the Biden administration. Progressive district attorneys are decriminalizing theft, refusing to prosecute lawbreakers, emptying jails, and literally abandoning families to criminals on the streets. The crime wave wreaking havoc in our cities is overshadowed only by the wave of illegal immigration crashing into our shores. Nearly 2 million illegal immigrants were encountered at our border in the last year, the most in history. And make no mistake about it, the crisis at our southern border was created solely by the Biden administration that undid policies in our administration that had reduced illegal immigration by 90%. And the time has come for Homeland Security and President Biden to step up and secure our southern border. And the radical left is no longer content to merely ignore or rewrite our laws by bureaucratic fiat. Now they're taking direct aim at the God-given liberties enshrined in our Constitution. Free speech is under attack like never before. I'm writing a book right now about my life, and almost everybody's excited about it. I ran into a little cancel culture of my own. But seriously, anybody who refuses to toe the liberal line is banned, bullied, persecuted, fired, expelled, or even canceled. It's true. Parents who speak up against political indoctrination in school board meetings face the prospect of being investigated as a domestic terror by the Justice Department. And the Second Amendment's under attack. It was recently revealed that Joe Biden's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is maintaining a national gun registry with nearly 1 billion records about law-abiding citizens. This list, this database is unlawful, unconstitutional, and the Biden administration must delete it and delete it now. And personal freedom. Personal freedom is under attack by this administration. You know, after promising during the campaign to shut down the virus, President Biden has instead supported a rolling shutdown of American liberties. After President Biden tried to mandate vaccines for 90 million Americans in businesses across America, it was conservatives that stepped forward to challenge that unconstitutional mandate, and it was our new conservative majority on the Supreme Court that struck that mandate down. You know, I was there at the outset of this pandemic when President Trump tapped me to lead the White House Coronavirus Task Force. And I couldn't be more proud of what the American people accomplished in those early days. So we reinvented testing. We saw to the delivery and manufacture of billions of supplies and saw to the development of medicines and vaccines at a record pace. But I especially marveled at how American healthcare workers stood in the gap and rendered care long before we fully understood the virus. I mean, American doctors, nurses, and healthcare workers are all heroes, and they should be commended by every American every day. That's why it was so troubling to me when the Biden administration instituted a vaccine mandate on our healthcare workers. I mean, think about it. After those heroic Americans went into harm's way without a vaccine for an entire year, now the Biden administration says you have to get vaccinated or you get fired. And sadly, our court upheld that mandate. Look, I'm proud of our vaccines. I believe Operation Warp Speed was a medical miracle. I'm vaccinated myself, but in a free society, that's a choice every American should make for themselves. And I think that's especially true of our healthcare workers. I mean, think about it. Our healthcare workers took the beach without body armor for an entire year. And I think it's wrong and unfair to make our doctors and nurses choose between vaccine and their jobs. They deserve better than that. America owes them the right to choose for themselves how they will care for themselves as they care for our families. Beyond it all, I don't need to tell the Federalist Society that our courts and our Constitution have also been under assault. Just this week, President Biden said that our Constitution was, in his words, always evolving, as he discussed filling a newly vacant seat on the Supreme Court. And the radical left continues to push the idea of packing the court with left-wing judges who will shred the Constitution to achieve their political aims. And also, President Biden announced that he intends to choose a Supreme Court nominee based first and foremost on the candidate's race and gender. Even though a vast majority of the American people, 76% of Americans, want the president to consider all possible nominees to the court. You know, when I chose Clarence Thomas to administer the oath of office during our inauguration, it was not because he was an African-American justice. It was because Justice Clarence Thomas is simply the most consistent constitutional conservative on the Supreme Court of the United States. President Biden should consider all possible nominees first and foremost on their character and their commitment to the rule of law. You know, if the radical left doesn't end its obsession with identity politics, it'll tear this country apart. But the good news is, while the left seems to be at work as never before, conservatives are leaning into the fight for freedom, and Federalist Society lawyers are in the forefront. And I'm proud to report to you that our new policy group has been standing with you every step of the way. With the help of our All Federalist Society legal team at our offices, we filed amicus briefs with the Supreme Court supporting school choice and religious liberty. We joined the fight against the president's unconstitutional vaccine mandate. And soon we'll join the fight to defend the rights of a high school football coach who was fired for engaging in 30 seconds of personal prayer at the end of a football game. You know, the freedom of religion is our first freedom. And after more than a decade of intolerance against people of faith by the American left, Hollywood, and big business, we must defend the right of every American to live, to work, to worship according to the dictates of their conscience, and we will. And most important of all, with conservative voices across America, we're calling on the Supreme Court of the United States to uphold Mississippi's abortion law and restore the sanctity of life to the center of American law. You know, I've long believed a society can be judged by how it deals with its most vulnerable, the aged, the infirm, the disabled, and the unborn. And like all of you, I pray the new conservative majority on our Supreme Court has the courage of their convictions. The time has come to overturn Roe v. Wade. The time has come to send Roe versus Wade to the ash heap of history. But in these times when our nation seems so divided, I say to each and every one of you here, now more than ever, we need to look to the wisdom of our founders. As we seek to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense and the general welfare, and to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity, we must do as Americans have done through much more challenging times in our history. We must stand strong on the Constitution of the United States of America. You know, every office holder in this country takes the same oath that I took on January 20th, 2017. I raise my right hand, I put my left hand on Ronald Reagan's Bible, and I pledge to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Many of you have taken that same oath. It's actually the same oath that our son took when he was commissioned in the United States Marine Corps, and the same oath my father took before going off to combat in the Korean War. Surrounded by our family, I made a solemn American promise to the American people that ended with a prayer. So help me God. And every day for 4 years of our administration, I prayed for the grace and strength to do just that. As constitutional conservatives, the American people must know that we will always keep our oath to the Constitution, even when it would be politically expedient to do otherwise. As the late, great Justice Antonin Scalia said, "I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, which is apply the Constitution, even though I do not always like the results." The American people must know, as the Bible says, that we'll keep our oath, even when it hurts. January 6th was a dark day in the history of the United States Capitol. Lives were lost, and many were injured. But thanks to the courageous action of the Capitol Police and federal law enforcement, the violence was quelled, the Capitol was secured, and we reconvened the Congress that very same day to finish our work under the Constitution of the United States and the laws of this country. Under Article 2, Section 1, elections are conducted at the state level, not by the Congress. The only role Congress has with respect to the Electoral College is to open and count votes submitted and certified by the states. No more, no less. Actually, our founders were deeply suspicious of consolidated power in our nation's capital. We're rightly concerned with foreign interference in our presidential elections if they were decided in our new capital. That's why the Constitutional Convention settled on state-based elections. And that's also why the United States Senate was right to reject the Democrats' latest effort to nationalize our elections just 2 weeks ago. But there are those in our party who believe that as the presiding officer over the joint session of Congress, that I possess unilateral authority to reject Electoral College votes. And I heard this week that President Trump said I had the right to overturn the election. But President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone. And frankly, there is no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president. Under the Constitution, I had no right to change the outcome of our election. And Kamala Harris will have no right to overturn the election when we beat them in 2024. Look, I understand the disappointment many feel about the last election. I was on the ballot. But whatever the future holds, I know we did our duty that day. John Quincy Adams reminds us, duty is ours, results are God's. And the truth is, there's more at stake than our party or political fortunes. Men and women, if we lose faith in the Constitution, we won't just lose elections. We'll lose our country. That being said, I believe the time has come to focus on the future, and I know we will. With assaults on our freedom, runaway inflation, crime wave in our cities, and a disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan that emboldened our adversaries around the world, I know that freedom-loving Americans will continue to come together and move forward in defense of all we hold dear. And I promise you, we will stay in the fight. And I will not allow the Democrats or their allies in the media to use the actions of those who ransacked the Capitol to demean the aspirations of 74 million Americans who cherish our values and cause. You know, inscribed on the Liberty Bell are words from Leviticus. It reads, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land, and unto all the inhabitants thereof." So men and women of the Federalist Society, let's keep proclaiming liberty on the foundation poured in the Constitution of the United States and defended by every generation since. Let's raise the banner of freedom high, and let's be confident that the American people will rally to our cause. Let's keep the faith. Let's keep faith with the ideals of our founders enshrined in the Declaration and that Constitution. Let's keep faith with those millions of Americans who know in their heart that the sun has not set on the land of the free. And most of all, let's keep faith with him who has ever guided this great experiment in freedom. As we do our duty, the God and country, I know the best days in this one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, are yet to come. Thank you. Thank you for the honor of addressing me. God bless you all, and God bless America.